coming back. We've got our guest in our posse, John Bentley, author of The Royal Secret. Great book. He sent me a copy when I interviewed him the last time. I really enjoyed it. And I'm a tough act to please. We were kind of just gabbing about you know, how so many people don't read or don't have books. So for me, that's trying to say, well, it's like you don't have air to breathe or something like that. I just take it for a given that usually I got five or six on the go in my reading pile, and you know, and then another one will sneak in there, and I want to make a move on it because it's just so important to understand what's going on, is to have direct knowledge of events and not take the word of those that I described before that only talk about smooth things to lead you astray and take you down a false trail, or just to manipulate. The ultimate emancipation is the emancipation of your mind, your thought processes. And you do that with books and with reading to understand. So many young people just seem to think of reading as torture or something akin to that, that you may actually learn something. And that's why I always try to remind Americans of a great American, Gil Scott Heron, who, you know, was the man who came up with the phrase, the revolution will not be televised. And because the revolution is in your mind. The first revolution is when you change your mind about how you look at things and see there might be another way to look at it that you have not been shown. And frequently, you are not shown those other ways. I can take it as a given. I was just thinking of a logic statement I used with somebody the other day, as there's two sides to a coin. And when we're in anything, especially like this COVID event, there's only one side to the coin, their side. So you know right away they're lying to you because they won't show you the other side of the coin. Because if you take it and you turn it and you look at both sides, you can see clearly what the truth is and what it is not, and keep the coin. But
that's so right. I mean, thanks, George, for the intro. Basically, I think, like you, there are many of us trying to get the message across to the world that it's in trouble, serious trouble. It's not just from the climate change or use of fossil fuels, but it's a deliberate man-made catastrophe, COVID-19. It's a deadly virus, which I foresaw 6 years ago in my book, The Royal Secret, and one is has been deliberately made by man in order to dispose of other men. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is now becoming a fact. We heard just recently that, that in fact, the SARS-type virus that is now COVID-19 was actually patented in the year 2000. It was developed in Carolina University, and then was moved to China, Wuhan, to avoid suspicion. And the formula has been picked up by a group of billionaire eugenicists, people who believe in population control, or is going to save mankind from itself. But they see it from their point of view, which is to protect their fortunes and their lives and at the expense of other people, people who they think are weak or frail or not intelligent. They consider that these people should be disposed of. And COVID-19 is a way that they feel that they're going to solve the problems of the world from overpopulation and lack of resources. I foresaw the dangers of COVID 6 years ago when I published my book. And in it, strangely, I linked the life of an Elizabethan statesman and philosopher, Francis Bacon, to COVID, so that the origins of those in power over the centuries could be seen and understood as to how the public today are manipulated and controlled by powerful elites, secretive forces, which, as they have always been, which can, of course, be used for good and evil, but principally, I'm afraid, to sustain their own power and wealth. Bacon, he was an advocate himself of a new world order, which these people are trying to establish. But one, of course, ruled democratically in a true form for the good of man, whereas I don't trust the people people at the moment who are in charge of COVID for 1 second. And you and I have been accused of being conspiracy theorists, and we were being mad and barking up the wrong tree and whatever. But I'm convinced that this is a man-made virus, and it's been contrived for deliberate reasons.
Oh, indeed. When I listened to Dr. Martin explain the patent history of this, there was absolutely no mistake. And when I try to deal with people who are completely, taken off to Kansas, or Oz, I guess would be a better analogy, I want to bring them back to Kansas, it's almost impossible to put any form of reason into their mind at all. And one of the first patents was that it was patented as a bioweapon. I heard that some time ago at the beginning of this. And I go, that ends my interest in ever getting some shot put in my arm. I'm going to put a bioweapon in my arm? Like, I'm slow. I'm from Canada, but I'm not that slow.
But the trouble is, I think with COVID, that it does actually the antidote for it. The vaccinations do actually alter the DNA structure. So what they do is effectively take over from the natural immunity that people have, and so fine the first time round, but the next time it comes at you, your natural immunity is not there to protect you. You have to have another jab and pay for it, in order to protect yourself. It's a bit like Monsanto selling seeds to countries where they have to buy Monsanto seeds every year instead of propagating their own, because they take over, it's as strong, they take over the old seeds, and we need to beware very much of the fact that we're being pushed and herded into a situation where we are going to become slaves, effectively. I'm not saying that people are not slaves already. Most people in employment have to do what they're told and obey the rules, but not to the extent that is envisaged for us, I think, now. I think it's part and parcel of other things, COVID. It's part of an overall plot to digitalize cash, to collect data on everybody so that the central computer, whoever's in charge of it, will know where we are, who we are, who we're seeing, what we eat, what we do, what we bought, what we've done every second of the day. And so they will control our lives completely. And this is the fear. And it seems odd that I should link it with Shakespeare and Bacon, but Bacon was a great philosopher who foresaw the evils of the world and the power and corruption that can come with it. As much as he saw the tragedy, he saw the comedies as well. And we're moving away from comedy in this world. Everybody's scared. People are afraid. People are afraid for their lives, afraid for their jobs. It's a sad world we're looking at. And I think it all comes down to what you said at the beginning, which is people aren't reading. They don't absorb it. They just see bits on the news of competing rival television stations, nearly all of whom carry the same message anyhow. You're not allowed to criticize. If you say something on Facebook or Google that's not liked, then you're disqualified. You can't say it again. And so the world is in trouble, without a doubt, because of the lack of freedom of speech that's being squashed as well under the guise of racism or people are called racist for having an opinion. It generally speaking, is a disastrous state that we need to get over to people. Again, I go back to Shakespeare because I think his advice to people, which is a way of leading your life and seeing the good, bad, and funny sides of it all, as well as the tragedies, he sought a balance of life, which we're losing. We're losing the balance.
Oh, indeed. The powerful thing about that era, too, is it was a complete and total surveillance society too. And that's why the works of Shakespeare had to be written under a pen name, so that the real author, the real originator of thought, can't, you know, be hauled off to the tower and put on the rack. Everybody was being spied on by, you know, the best in the, you know, if you want to study the espionage aspects of history or the world, that era had nothing on the Russians in 1917 or post with the NKVD, the KGB, and such like that. It was a terrible monastic police state where, you know, the slightest word against you is going to have you hauled off to the tower and to face torture and, you know, loss of status and such, that it was fundamental for you to protect your friends, your compatriots, to keep your words veiled with language so that you could speak tongue-in-cheek and talk about things that the average person overhearing your conversation wouldn't understand, and that would keep your tongue in your mouth or your head on your shoulders just a little bit longer. And it seems now with technology they're taking us back to an era like that, where every word and deed and action is monitored, surveyed, and used against us. And generally, by and large, things are just taken out of context and people don't understand what your true meaning of things are, that you're in no way a threat to the great institutions of evil. It's just you formed a thought. You committed the ultimate Orwellian crime, the thought crime, to have a thought independent of the ones they were trying to put into your mind. And by and large, that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing, because it's, they say they stress test the banks. Stress testing our ideologies by free thought is the best way to keep the system from collapsing, because we may all run off in a certain direction, like getting an inoculation, and certain heretics like us would kind of stand back and go, I don't think so. I want to look at some facts and see where I'm going with this and where it's going to take me. And when we understand that, we're more adamant to say we're making a big mistake. When the mistake's over, you won't find anyone who would ever say that they supported inoculation or anything like that, even if they have 10 jab marks in their arm, because they'll know what happened.
Well, but you're certainly right about a world in which everybody's action is recorded, and you're right from the start. From the moment a child uses Facebook or Twitter or TikTok or anything like this, these are recorded for life and held against you, and in a sort of McCarthy type era that we're seeing at the moment. Going back to Elizabeth, of course, and Elizabeth I, and who I believe was Bacon's mother, she would, of course, run the ultimate spy ring, and her number one spy, 007, that was the first time 007 was used, and they used to meet in a room called Room 40. And most of her spies also were, a lot of them were gay, which probably was a binding force. And others she was claimed to have slept with, apparently, in order to obtain their loyalty. So she was a master spy indeed. And of course, Bacon, her son, who started to find these things out, I was scared of her, as everybody else was scared of her, because she actually killed her second son, had him executed. Because she was in a paranoid move and thought that he was trying to dispose of her and take her throne. So you had to be pretty wary of Elizabeth I. So I guess perhaps nothing's changed. Perhaps, you know, people were scared then and people are scared now of forces really sort of beyond their control. But I think she didn't have a weapon called COVID, and this is the weapon we're talking about now. This is the weapon that really puts people into fear. People obey rules that they would never think of obeying. They stay indoors. They don't come out. They're not allowed to see people they want to see, their mothers, their children, their lovers, and so on. We are in a grave situation of losing the freedom of speech completely. My day, when I was a a young man, I used to go up to Hyde Park Corner in England and watch with my father 20 or 30 guys standing on soapboxes who would say just about anything that they felt saying. Some of them were religious fanatics, other people were political left-wing or right-wing or whatever. And it was part of England, part of the whole idea of the basis of democracy and free speech, which is why my father took me there. But now it's been banned. There's nothing there. Nobody's allowed there now.
Well, that's just abhorrent, really, because generally, you know, we still have a lot of public speakers here in Toronto at Dundas Square. And people come out to speak about all sorts of things. Mostly the most determined are various Christian souls who come out and, you know, preach the gospel and try to teach people about Jesus. And then, of course, there's a sundry political spheres here or there. But regardless of what anyone's speaking, it's just the sound of it refreshes my soul that there's freedom of speech. And whether I listen or I don't listen or I concur or I don't, it's just that sound is freedom, and I accept that. And the same when I'm in the country and I'm walking around and, you know, I hear a few gunshots here or there. I know it's not the revolution. I know it's just some honest soul somewhere hunting, target shooting, or using a firearm. And it also reminds me that I live in a free state, and I'm happy about that. So I'm not invited to dinner if there's something going to be on the plate or whatever, but just to know that certain sounds exist, know that the system is working, just like you'd hear your child cry or something as they get a little antsy about one thing or another. Well, it doesn't matter. You know they're alive and everything's fine. That's just the noise of life, and you're happy to have it.
Well, it's great that you have that encounter. I haven't lived in England, you know, for many years now. I'm English by birth, and I've probably spent the first 50 years of my life in England, but the last 30 years I've been out in the States for a while, and I've been living in between Portugal and France for the last 20 years. And in France here, there is actually more freedom of speech here in France than there is, oddly enough, in the UK right now. And there's certainly hunters in my part of the world shooting their rabbits and whatever. And a local friend of mine here just tells me that France is an ungovernable country, and it never has been governable. It does what it wants, regardless of its prime ministers or its government. And to some extent, when I see some of the things that happen on the streets here and so on, I'm inclined to agree with him.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And that's one thing I take great heart in, is when something's happening, it doesn't take too long for the people of France to take to the streets and make themselves heard in spite of the tear gas or the riot squads or whatever. That they take these truths that many of us talk about being self-evident, they take them to the streets and they talk about it, they scream about it, they shout about it, and they just reinforce the memory of those who probably would be akin to other characters on a Bastille Day event, to remember the power is with the people, and the people aren't giving it up, and the people are going to be the masters of their own destiny. And that's just a natural state of being, and you can't force an unnatural state of being on us. It cannot last. The only thing you can do is make the relief of the pressure more violent with each successive attempt to restrain it. It's trying to, like, hold down a pressure vessel.
Sure.
Pressure has to be released. And the speaker is kind of like that steam whistle on a pressure vessel, and that whistles and makes noise to let the pressure out so that the steam vessel doesn't explode. Because when it explodes, it's uncontrollable, and it's a big mess all over the place. And it's the elites that pay for that. So in a way, it's better for them to allow free speech, to allow the pressure to dissipate, than to try to contain it. Because when you try to contain it, sooner or later, kaboom.
I think that's right. The trouble with the UK at the moment, you've got it's all the minorities who are in the ascendance at the moment. Every little group that claims that it's transgender or it's put down or it's the wrong color or the right color or whatever it happens to be, it's got to complain about life in general. And it's the masses. I think will be a backlash, probably, at some point. But again, the pressure has to build up sufficiently for that to happen. We've got, but that again, I think COVID is going to bring, is going to move about. In the UK at the moment and Europe, COVID is coming back with quite a force. And whether, in fact, it's ever going to go away, of course, is a big question. Whether it comes back in different forms or whether it's more powerful or not so powerful. But I think it seems to be something we're going to have to live with. The trouble is, are we going to have to live with the dictation of governments and telling us what we've got to do and what we can't do? And that's the worry that I have. And again, I had it in my book that behind the scenes always, that people that are really ruling us, which are not our governments. Normally, it's power groups behind the governments, lobbyists, people who have their own agenda and a great deal of wealth to push it. These are the people who are really moving the rest of us around. And I think that the toll is with social media nowadays, you would think that effectively it would give greater freedom, that people are able to express their independence and talk among each other via social media. But so much, unfortunately, social media is just devoted to basically rubbish, I think, and gossip and so on. I remember a long time ago, I started a business in video rental in the UK, and I started buying books on opera and art and theatrical plays and so on, and material in order to turn into videos, and nobody wanted it. People just wanted horror movies and sci-fi and porno. and it was a sad thing to see, but this is the way of the world, and we call ourselves democracies, and democracies have carried the weight of everybody, which I don't object to.
Okay, we'll see you on the other side of the break. This is Power Hour Nation. I'm George Freund. With us, John Bentley. Thank you.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back, my friends, to Power Our Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Fry, and joining us for the last segment, John Bentley. And just a quick reminder for how we pay for the gas here at Power Hour is to remind you that on sale this week at the Power Mall, 10% off Happy Bodies Detox Cocktail and the Phosphatidylcholine Good Health Naturally Products, Strouth's Natural Products, Magnesium Oil, Precious Krill Beads, 10% off Miracle 2 products, soap, moisturizing soap, neutralizer, skin moisturizer, 10% off Willard Water products, Grown by Nature, Iron and Molybdenum, 25% off, new products, Global Healing Center, Acid Reflux Relief. Boy, you really need that when you need that. Paratrex, North American Herb and Spice, Herbal Z's, and Hyper E's. So those are things to keep in mind to have good health for you, so you can listen and participate in great discussions and debates here at this station and start to learn a little bit about what is happening to us that you won't hear anywhere else with basically the world's whoremongers of media who just lead you basically to your own destruction. They're like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, and for some strange reason they have an intoxicating effect on people, and they just willingly trail behind whatever comes along, and it just boggles my mind when you know the history of it, that in virtually every event, every generation, there's been these episodes, and they've told us these lies. And that's what I read about this hyper-reality thing that was in The Guardian recently, where they talked about the toppling of Saddam's statue was the big story, and it was all made up. That's 18 years later, they tell us the truth. It was all made up. Well, I knew that in 2003. It was all made up. They're just making a story to take us into some sort of perpetual war to keep me a slave. So by following these people, you are enslaving yourself. The emancipation is the emancipation of your mind. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can change our minds or provide ourselves with information to lead us away from bondage. But we give that up, and we give it to powers, corporate powers, or individual role model powers, who are probably under the control of some big corporation anyway, and allow them to be our masters of every thought, every word, every action, every deed. And then we have the nerve to stand up and try to assert to people that we are free. No, we're not. To be free means as you can walk in the opposite direction to the many without any fear or retribution. That's freedom. If you have to be coerced, cajoled, pressured to conform, you're a slave. So I'm happy to be in a world where people can go in all sorts of directions.
when people are lulled into something by what they're offered, you know, the football and the sports and the cinema and the leisure activities of life and so on, and they're fed, you know, nicely, sufficiently to keep them quiet and happy, and while all around them, actually, their lives are being controlled in a way that they not sufficiently to worry them, not sufficiently to shake them up enough. And coming back to my favorite subject, Bacon, of course, you know, his icon was the shaken spear of knowledge. This is where the word Shakespeare came from originally, when he wrote under the picture of the shaken spear of knowledge, which was held in the hand of the Greek goddess of wisdom, Pallas Athena. And he was a radical, Bacon, and so were his friends. They were often writing subversive material against the Queen and the government, and that's what they kept together very tightly in a tight-knit circle of people. They could actually call themselves the Knights of the White Helmet, which is quite a good name, and they were typical young radical university group. So they were smoking a smoking pot, which has just been brought over from the American Indians to England, and getting drunk on beer and porter and wine and so on. And they were not, you know, the Shakespeare's, as people think, is a respectable gentleman who was, you know, quite old and bald and all of that. So he was not. He was a rebel, you know, right from the start. And in his real situation as Bacon and the son of the Queen and a possible heir to the throne, he certainly was rebellious. Of course, he had to watch out for his mother, who was quite prepared to chop off people's heads if they got the right, if they got the wrong side of her. But once again, I agree with you that we are lulled, the people generally are lulled, and it was one of Shakespeare's great jobs to try and educate the people. He the English language basically was quite short, probably about, I don't know, 3,000 words, 4,000 words in Chaucer's time, and he developed that to 20,000 words, which he took from various other sources of Latin, Greek, French, German, and so on, and produced a whole new understanding of what, of course, was Renaissance Europe, and he brought the Renaissance somewhat later to the United Kingdom and to Britain to try and educate the British public by means of his simple tales, and consequently for them to be free and not to be pushed around by his mother and various kings and the monarchy. And that was his dream for America, because he was given the job along with Raleigh and Drake to found the American colonies in Carolina and Virginia, and basically they planned, all of them, to a democratic state, which was going to be free of the British monarchy. And of course, as we know, the Americans eventually claimed their independence, and the founding fathers of America were virtually all Englishmen, because they called themselves Americans by that time, but they were English by birth and blood. Bacon was behind this. He wrote words which, in a book called The New Atlantis, which really came to be part of the American Constitution, and his whole being, which is why I he's my hero, without a doubt, was for the freedom of man, but the ability of man to understand to himself what he was doing, and not to be at the whim of powerful forces.
Well, indeed, that's the whole substance of history through any era, is you seem to have a yin and yang, you have a power structure, usually of some dysfunctional character, despotic figure, who desires to use one of the most dysfunctional human traits to control everything and micromanage everything down to the last atom in your body. And then, of course, to understand freedom and to breathe the air of it is to know that independent thoughts and ideas, even if they're antithetical to your own, are essential in a balance of any sort of society. And, you know, it doesn't change my life. I don't have to take it home that someone else does other things or thinks another way. That's their sovereign right, and I have my own. And by and large, I take no notice of anything they do to, you know, add to the ethos of intellectual might. But one thing I do object to is when they try to decide that their way is the way and to force a way upon us that goes against what we may think, believe, or anticipate and turn it all upside down. Then that becomes the time when one has to stand firm and say, no, enough is enough. And how far that will go in this present day environment is challenging. My son reminded me of a great line, give us this day our daily faith, but deliver us from belief, because some of the beliefs that come along are just completely absurd, and, you know, to force a completely unhealthy state of affairs upon people is basically an abuse of office, an abuse of the system, and probably an abject form of war, because they're breaking us down like we're in a prison camp to defeat our understandings of our existence, of history, of knowledge, and dehumanizing us to the point in a brainwashing technique so that we're open to be reformed and recreated in a new manner. And this is quite obvious to me, and a lot of the pressure tactics that are being used in these new paradigms to say, you know, there's 100-something genders, or, you know, that somehow, for some strange reason, that nasty carbon molecule is turning the world askew, when in reality the world has been in flux for weather since its existence, and that it follows a wave pattern, and we're just in one particular part of the wave. Those wave patterns are in the neighborhood of 40, 50,000 years, and are more akin to volcanic eruption, spewing all sorts of matter into the atmosphere. And it has nothing to do with us. That's just, you know, some gobbledygook that's used to basically enslave us and take our money away from us, and it will make absolutely no change at all.
Well, I do think the forces of nature, fortunately for us all, prevail, greater than mankind and all the knowledge of mankind put together. Eventually, whatever mankind does, nature will do what it's going to do, what it wants to do. It'll turn the earth on an axis. It'll alter the climate. It'll if the world is not giving sufficient resources, it will determine how many people live and die and so on. It is, to my mind, and to Bacon's mind too, really, nature was the ultimate power, the ultimate God, really. And I think man, who unfortunately nowadays, and there are quite a few scientists among them, who start to believe that man is God, or they are God, and that science rules all. And this is the problem. We're moving away from something which is hard to define, spirituality. The Renaissance was, in the time of Bacon and Shakespeare, was a time of rebirth of spirituality, of the old Egyptians and the Romans and the Greeks, and they lived in a different form of world, one that understood the forces of nature and their place in it, and it gave them a completely different outlook on life, which is very difficult to do if you're walking about in central Vancouver or New York or London and looking at tall buildings and watching where you're doing on the pavement. You never look up at the sky. You don't look at your surroundings. You're just being fed, looking at your smartphone nowadays and being fed with minute-to-minute news, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, do this, do that, turn up here, you know, when your girlfriend's calling up or whatever. We live in a world where the thought processes of people a long time ago, which were, and the time that they had on their hands to give greater thought, there was not the stress and pressure of having to go out and make money and buy cars and, you know, holidays and this, that, the other. These things, I think, take away from, you know, from the true life, really, from the life that mankind was really meant to lead without all these pressures. And that's what I fear. And that's what I fear for my children or for my grandchildren. I'm sad for them. And I suppose I'm an older man now. And so this is perhaps the story of all older people, that they get worried about the world that's coming behind them. But unless we open our mouths and talk about it and try and get the message across, who's going to listen?
Oh, indeed, indeed. It is part of our sacred duty and trust to instill the knowledge of the past mistakes, the past greatness to younger generations so that they can arm themselves with this knowledge and defeat whatever enemies try to subdue them, because that's part and parcel of why they want to clear their minds and make them vulnerable so that foreign ideas or concepts that are antithetical to freedom and life can be put into their minds to subdue them and turn them into slaves, that they have to go to the master of this destiny, begging and groveling for their next injection to maintain their life, because they'll have never understood their immune system and what it meant and what power it had, what abilities it had.
That's right.
So took this jab and had it destroyed, and now, how much will you pay for the next shot?
Yeah, this is so true.
We released a new one every day. And that's part of what Mr. Biden is doing. One of the things I see, too, is as a condition of loans for many countries, if not all countries, the IMF will mandate that you take this jab. And so I see a greater monster behind this. Either it's the eternal bankruptcy and we no longer need this many herd animals on the farm anymore and they're culling the herd, maybe even in totality. And we are willingly walking, or at least a lot of people are willingly walking into the execution chamber to take this. And we're getting into a slow motion genocide.
I think this is true. I mean, here in France, there's a move against cattle, for instance. The gases of cows and sheep and so on are contributing to the damage of climate change, and that therefore they need to be got rid of, and people must not eat meat anymore, and nor the products of meat, milk, and so on. And I can see us all in the future eating sort of pills instead of substance of a meal, and being told that these pills are good for us and they've got all the vitamins that we need, and that will be sufficient for us. We're on a dangerous route, and it sounds as if I'm banging on too much about it, but this is what this conversation is meant to be about. So, and I welcome the advantage, you know, the opportunity you give me to discuss it with you. Fortunately, you know, there are all sorts of historic instances of despots being overthrown and despotic regimes being overthrown. And although I was talking before about the dangers of democracy, of course, there have been people who have come out of nowhere and confronted the powers that be and overthrown them, and they used the sword of justice and freedom to establish new ways for everybody. So we're never without hope, that's for sure. But we will live without hope if we don't learn from the past, which is, as you've just been saying. And we're looking, I think, at an unequal world at the moment. We read constantly about, you know, new billionaires. I used to be a millionaire when I was younger. I was a rich man. Now it's a billionaire. Now it's not even a billionaire. It's somebody with $100 billion and so on. And I think, you know, this gives rise to resentment and inequality when I hear, for instance, about people sleeping in tents in Venice Beach, and which I used to know well in California and in Los Angeles, and all sorts of problems on the streets in Paris and so on. There needs to be a greater equality without any shadow of doubt. And again, this is a problem, I think, of the people who have got money. They may not be rich, but they're okay and they're comfortable in their houses and they can be easily manipulated. They don't want to do anything about it and get off their backsides. But they need to be made aware without any shadow of doubt that there are secret powers greater than governments, in my view. And I remember that Eisenhower, when he was president of the United States, and he resigned, and he warned then against the dangers of the military, sometimes in the name of Freemasonry in the States, that these people would have too much power and were got used to power in the war, and one had to beware of generals and people in uniforms generally, and I think that still goes today.
Oh, indeed, indeed. There's many levels of control over us. I delve into some of them to go further to hidden lives, hidden civilizations. Oh, okay. I didn't know if that was me or him. So this is very, very important. I've found words that were never translated in the Bible that tell us about another species that's here with us, Adam HaChadash, the mystical, magical Adam that's in Colossians 3, that is designated to kill the original Adam, Adam HaKadoni, and that's us. And they're doing it right now before our eyes. Since my guest was from France, I did look up a little bit of the translation of the French national anthem, La Marseillaise. Arise, children of the fatherland, our day of glory has arrived. Against us the bloody flag of tyranny is raised, the bloody flag is raised. Do you hear in the countryside the roar of those ferocious soldiers? They're coming right into your arms to cut the throats of your sons, your comrades. To arms, citizens, form your battalions. Let's march, let's march. That's their impure blood should water our fields. Definitely not politically correct. From a time when the Bastille was stormed and the French wrote it down, like the Americans, to remind you of the great battles against the tyranny of oppression of various little sundry groups of elitists, and the price that has to be paid to keep that freedom on your plate. And, that's just part of the history many of the young ones don't get to hear. Okay, welcome back, John. Hopefully that wasn't some nasty intelligence agency pulling the wires.
I heard you, George, and on the last point you're making there, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think that's one of the terrible thing or the sad thing possibly is it's only when human beings experience disaster and catastrophe and so on that they actually reach their senses, the normal people reach their senses and realize, you know, what life is really about and what is valuable and what is precious and so on. I mean, I was born at the beginning of the First World War, you know, to the sound of bombs and the V-bombers and so on. And we were evacuated, you know, to a quiet area of the country. But it certainly brought people together. I can remember the victory marches in the streets and the flags and the bunting and the happiness of people, really, that the catastrophe was over and they could go back to what they can, you know, normal lives and do a decent job. job and join their families again and so on. And they were very, very happy with a lot less than people have now. You know, we were right up until I was 15 years old in the UK, we were allowed, you know, one slice of bacon a week and one pat of butter and one egg and so on. And you know, by comparison, today people have lived like kings, by like Roman emperors, the choices that they have. And I think this, again, is the problem. People are spoiled. But why not spoil people? It's wonderful that people have these facilities for life, as long as they don't forget where it all comes from. It comes from their ability to earn, their ability to for a good economic society, that one that is at peace with itself and the rest of the world, and also one that is not where money is being taken by the super rich and used for, you know, gigantic schemes or yachts or vast palaces or whatever, and taken away from the general public who need it. So we need more equality, without a doubt. I'm no communist. I'm no lefty. Believe me, I've made a fortune in my life from once upon a time, lost most of it again. But I'm old enough to be enjoying my retirement and living in a happy place at the moment. And that's what I want for my kids and my grandchildren as well.
Oh, indeed, indeed. I think the French summed it up in a term way back then: fraternity, equality, liberty. And that is a recipe for success. And when we allow that to be tampered with, we know very clearly who the enemies are of our various nations or various cultures, and they clearly have to be put back in their place on a very, very tight leash. And that's the job of a free people in a free country, is to understand the great game and how it's played and not allow yourself to be exploited, because being free requires that you actually drive the bus and understand the great concepts that are before us. And if you can't, then you're held prisoner at the back of the bus while somebody else drives it. And in this case, they're driving it off a cliff. My son came up with a good term that I really like, too, that's been going around online and social media about this thing. He calls them the Branch COVIDians.
All right, yes, I know that. Yeah.
So our branch is a different branch. It's the tree of life. We thank you, John, for coming out. We're coming near the end of the hour, and we appreciate all your insights from a great mind and a great individual, and we hope to have you back down the road again for some further insights. Bless you.
Thanks, George, for the opportunity. I would recommend a study of Shakespeare to your listeners, and because the great philosopher and great wisdom came out of his mouth, out of Bacon's mouth, the real Shakespeare. And that's really why I wrote my book, to other people to understand his own life, which of course is one of tragedy himself and ups and downs, which we all have. Nobody is immune.
Indeed, indeed. The Royal Secret, John Bentley, highly recommend it. Look it up and buy it. You'll enjoy it. And thanks for coming out. We save this world. We save our countries.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.